When we think of famous art collectors, names like Getty or Frick come to mind, and now we can add Grant Hill. The first association that name brings to mind, of course, is basketball. Grant Hill is a six-time NBA All-Star, a two-time NCAA champion, an Olympic gold medalist, but one of his paintings was featured in a recent retrospective of the artist Romer Bearden's work at the National Gallery of Art here in Washington, D.C., and his private collection is currently on exhibit at the Orlando Museum of Art, where it's about to go on a seven-city tour. So where did this passion for art come from, and how did he put together such an impressive collection? And if you think you have to be a robber baron or a famous basketball player to be a serious art collector, we'll be talking with a couple who built a world-famous collection while he worked at the post office and she worked at the library. Later in the program, also, Sharon Robinson joins us. She's the daughter of Jackie Robinson and has a new children's book out about her father. But first, the how and why of collecting art. What's hanging on your walls? Is fine art a passion, an indulgence, or is the idea of collecting too intimidating to you? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And Grant Hill joins us now. The exhibit of his personal collection is called Something All Our Own, the Grant Hill Collection of African American Art. He joins us from his home in Orlando, Florida, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We used the surprise of, you know, a basketball player collecting art as the hook to this program. But should people be surprised that a ball player is collecting serious art?
Well, I know it sounds a little unusual. Surprisingly, there are a few of my colleagues who are collectors. Some names that immediately come to my mind. Ray Allen, who's currently playing, Clyde Drexler, who is a Hall of Fame player who has retired, and a few other names, Elliot Perry, Daryl Walker, gentlemen who retired in the last 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know of these individuals as collectors, and I don't know of any other who I would classify as serious collectors, but I think those gentlemen, along with myself, I've been able to put together some pretty nice collections.
Now, we played a clip of tape at the beginning of the program of you talking about your father as the inspiration.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think my father, you know, he himself collected art. And as I mentioned in that piece, I mean, growing up in my home, you know, there was art throughout our house.
Mm-hmm.
He collected not just African-American art, but just really third world art. And, you know, the child being dragged to and from galleries, a lot of times under duress, I think slowly I just sort of developed an appreciation, I guess a love, passion for the arts and for collecting. And you know, becoming an adult and having the means financially to be able to afford some pieces and to be able to visit various galleries on my own, I have been able to put together a collection that I'm proud of.
Is your taste different than his?
Well, you know, somewhat different in some respects, but in some respects a lot the same. You know, my father was first and foremost always, you know, the person who I looked up to and who I tried to emulate. And we're both athletes, we're both history majors, I guess we're both collectors. We're similar in a lot of ways, and I guess that's pretty understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have some differences. And in our collection, I tend to collect some of the same important works, or at least important artists that he has. I also have some artists who aren't as well known that he may not have in his collection. He's a big Native American collector. He loves Native American art. I'm not really big in that. Although I respect it, but I think for me, being a history major, being someone who studied African American history, especially during the 20th century, you know, it's something that I could relate to. Something that, as I look at these pieces, whether they were done recently or 50 years ago, to me, they're snapshots of not just African American history, but history in general. And but because I can identify with a lot of these artists and a lot of these visions, a lot of these pieces that they put together, whether through myself or my family, my grandparents, there is that natural connection. So these are pieces I'm proud of, pieces that have some symbolic meaning, and you know, just something that you know, very mm-hmm. similar to my dad, but we're different in some ways.
I wonder, when you started collecting on your own, did you go to curators, people who you may have been introduced to through your father, of course, Calvin Hill, the great great football player, or did you pick stuff out on your own?
Well, I did a little bit of both. I picked my first piece I bought actually while I was in college at Duke, Ernie Barnes. He's a famous African-American artist, and he was from Durham, North Carolina. And he was the first piece I bought when I moved into my own apartment my junior year in college. And slowly, well, I wouldn't say slowly, it's only been about 10 years since then, but over the next 10 years, I guess, I've been able to put together a collection, you know, some visiting galleries on my own, working with various curators, friends of our families, you know, the connections, I guess, that my dad has developed through his years of collecting. That's one advantage, at least, I've had, is that he's been able to pass that on to me and my wife. And, you know, so I just, you know, I have some important pieces. I have some pieces that, just for whatever reason, I tend to like and enjoy. I'm not much of an art historian. I don't have the technical background, I guess, of an art historian. But I try to at least put together a collection that is well-balanced. And has a mixture of a variety of different pieces by a variety of different people.
Is there one piece in your collection that you really point to? You say, you know, boy, that was a great pick.
Well, I mean, it's hard to single out one. To me, you know, it's like saying which child of yours is your favorite. I think the one, you know, there's one piece in my collection that is the only piece that I didn't pay for. Actually, my dad.
Really?
Bought that piece actually back in 1970, and it's called Confrontation. And for me, growing up in my house as a child, that was one of the pieces that was above our fireplace in our family room. And it's just a piece that sort of describes the inner conflict that I think a lot of African American men have had. It's sort of hard to describe the piece over the phone or on the interview, but it's just a piece to me that I've seen as a child, and as I've grown up and as I've sort of aged and matured, I guess it's taken on different meanings. But more importantly, as I've studied African American history and becoming an adult myself, you see the inner conflict in the piece that I think a lot of African American men, but even men in general, have gone through. And it's something that, as you study our history, you definitely see the comparison.
And that, of course, is the appeal of a lot of art. As you look at it, you see different things, whether from childhood on or from even as an adult.
You do. You really do. You know, it's weird because the pieces are actually in, like you mentioned earlier, in the Orlando Museum of Art, and I was just over there today visiting.
They give you visitation rights.
Situation because a lot of the pieces were in my home. And they're no longer there. So that was one of, I guess, the drawbacks, at least, to putting this thing on tour. But you find yourself, you know, kind of in constant dialogue or in a constant conversation with your art. I know that may sound crazy, but and depending upon where you're at in your life or what you're going through or what you've read or what have you, they take on different meanings. And they represent different things to me at different times. So I find myself visiting there just to kind of, one, to make sure it's all there, but two, just to, you know, it's a part of my home, it's a part of my family. That's the way I look at those pieces. So it's something, as I look around our house here, our walls are pretty bare.
So you're going on a shopping trip anytime soon?
Well, we've since this, you know, this whole project has been kicked off, and the opening for the gallery, for the tour at least, here in Orlando started last November, and my pieces will be on tour for 2 years. But we've bought pieces since then.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I, and we, you know, this is something that, you know, we're not just doing for this particular tour and book that we've put out. This is something that we'll do for the rest of our lives, hopefully, and it's something we'll be able to pass on to our children a lot the same way that, you know, it was passed on to me. And so we've begun to add more pieces. Of course, we've moved into a bigger home, so we still don't have enough to cover all the walls, but it's just something we enjoy, and something we enjoy doing. And whether they're hanging on our walls, or we have them in storage, or we have them on tour, on display, it's a passion of ours that we thoroughly enjoy.
Art is eternal, sports ephemeral. Nevertheless, I have to ask you, sports fans in our audience will know that Grant Hill has been struggling with injuries the last couple of seasons. How's the rehab going? When can we expect you back on the court for the Orlando Magic?
I'm feeling good. I've been working out. I actually was sidetracked the last 2 weeks. Over, I had the flu and kind of wore me out. But I've been kind of given the okay to do what I'd like, and I'm running, I'm jumping, I'm competing. There's still debate as to whether or not I'll be back this season. There's some salary cap insurance reasons for why the team would not want me to come back this season. So we're definitely, trying to accommodate that. But I'm feeling good, and I've gone, longest in, maybe the last 4 years. This is the longest period of time that I've gone without really having any pain, so that's a good thing. Of course, the real test, like you said, is getting out there on the court and playing in the NBA game. But I'm just taking my time and rehabbing and just sort of following the doctor's orders and following my team's orders.
We actually have a caller who's called in with a question for you, so if I could hold you for another second or so.
Okay.
Charlie's on the line with us from Jacksonville, Florida. Charlie, you there?
Yes, sir. Mr. Hill, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Great, thanks. I just wanted to know if you use your time at Duke University to, I guess, expand your art horizons or knowledge, or if you're able to kind of focus your curriculum base there.
I'm sorry. If I use my time at Duke University?
Yeah, to expand your art horizons, to learn more about it.
Well, I mean, I think the time spent at Duke as an undergraduate student definitely, for me, helped form and shape a lot of my viewpoints on history. I was fortunate to be able to learn from some great teachers about African American history, and I'm regretful that I didn't, but I didn't, take any art history courses or anything from that standpoint. But just to understand, and I've always been fascinated and curious, with why things are the way they are now, and going back and sort of studying and having an understanding of that. And for me, the various pieces, are basically snapshots of American history and African-American history, more importantly. So I think my time at Duke, the classes that I was able to take, the research that I did in studying, history, African-American history, especially during the Harlem Renaissance, the 20s, and throughout through the Civil Rights Movement, I think there was a natural sort of progression into collecting African American art. Excuse me.
Sure.
And so I think my time at Duke was valuable for a lot of reasons, but importantly for my understanding and for my love and appreciation of African American history and African American art.
I think if you wanted to go back and take a couple of classes, the folks at Duke would probably be pretty understanding about it. But Grant Hill, thank you very much for being with us today.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And Charlie, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you, sir.
Grant Hill is an NBA All-Star for the Orlando Magic and a serious collector of African-American art. He joined us from his home. His collection is now on exhibit at the Orlando Museum of Art. It will travel to 6 other cities around the country. To see or find out more about his collection, you can check out the Talk of the Nation page on NPR's website, www.npr.org. When we come back from the break, we'll take more of your calls and discuss the how and why of collecting fine art. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing now the nuts and bolts of art collecting. How do you do it on a limited budget? If you're just getting into the market, a Picasso or a Monet is probably out of the question, unless you're a multimillionaire. A more affordable way to have real art around you is to look for work by emerging artists. Judd Tully joins us now. He's editor-at-large at Art and Auction Magazine, a magazine for art collectors. He's been covering the art market and the contemporary art scene for many years. He's at our bureau in New York, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
So where's a good place to start if you don't have the income of a J. Paul Getty or a Grant Hill?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, a lot depends on where you're located. In New York, which would be a great place to begin, you'd probably want to go to Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where there are a group of smaller, younger galleries that showcase artists who are not yet blue chip, meaning their sales are more modest and more affordable. And to find out wherever you are, you need information, and the best way to go about that is just, you know, to look at a local paper, you know, pick up an issue of Time Out magazine or in New York, the Village Voice, or even the New Yorker, and find out where these exhibits are and just start looking.
It's awfully intimidating to a lot of people, though. I mean, they feel there's a big risk.
That's true. I've heard many people, and even, you know, very wealthy people say that they're too intimidated to walk into a gallery or even to an auction house. And the idea is to just forget that. And that it's really a form of entertainment, and the galleries are there, they're free, they're open to the public, no one's going to bother you, and the only hard thing will probably be to find out what something costs.
Here's an email we got from KC. I buy original art instead of framing posters. In most cities, there are galleries that sell works for less than $100. We have an art walk every second Saturday of each month, free wine and cheese, hobnob, play the critic. People think it has to be a Picasso or the artist will become a Picasso. That is the win the lottery concept of art collecting. I buy what I like. I like to have one-of-a-kind pictures on my walls. Buying art is great entertainment. So maybe that seems to agree with what you're saying.
Absolutely. And also what Mr. Hill said earlier about buying something that you like, and because that's the key test. And because when you see something, say, in a gallery wall, and it might be a beautiful, you know, space in Chelsea with white walls and wood floors, and then you bring it home and you live with it for a while, and it's not so exciting. So there's also, you know, you have to live with the work of art, and you can always, you know, more or less trade it in for something else. But the real key is to find something that you respond to visually, emotionally, on whatever level.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Kevin, who's with us from Elk Grove, California.
Absolutely. I'm staring right now at a modern Dutch still life. Queen Anne's lace and a coffee grinder and some cherries that I bought in Georgetown for $1,000 about 4 years ago. Gave it to myself for Christmas. I have a Madonna and Child, a Coptic Madonna and Child that was hand-carved in Egypt, hanging on another wall. I have, and art goes beyond. It's not just what you hang on your walls. I have a wooden bowl sitting on top of the television that was hand-turned in Oregon. The stuff is out there. It's all over the place, and you don't have to spend any money to get it. I mean, you just have to keep your eyes open, and you have to form a taste. You have to know what you want, what you like, and then you buy what you like.
Well, Kevin, how did you get started?
My parents collected art, and I don't know how they got started, but the first thing I ever bought is a watercolor, which is by a Tennessee artist. I'm originally from Tennessee, and my parents had a couple of them, and we went to a showing of his, and it's simply a fence post with a little barbed wire running across it and some morning glories. The name of the piece is Morning Glories, and it's as simple as it can be, and I saw it and just fell in love with it. It was $800. This was, this was 25 years ago. My wife thought I was insane to spend $800 on something to hang on the wall, but, well, I did.
How does this reward you, Kevin, as opposed to collecting pottery or collecting, anything else, that postage stamps?
Oh, I've got a pottery bowl right here that was made by a Korean woman. Oh, I don't recall where I got that off the top of my head. I have a bamboo bowl, a huge red bamboo bowl that was made in China. That's absolutely gorgeous. that was given to me by a friend. It just spices up the entire house. This house, I mean, I wander through this house just looking at the things I've got. It seems acquisitive, but it's not really acquisitive. It's just it's so nice to have these beautiful things to look at, to enjoy, surrounding you. And you know, it doesn't take a lot of money. It just takes effort. I've got this. I have a poster hanging high on a wall that my brother bought. I guess he bought it in Switzerland. It's a movie poster, and I somehow or another I ended up with it. I don't know how, but I ended up with it. And I've always hated the damn thing, and couldn't bear to give it up.
Huh.
And I moved into this house, and suddenly there was a perfect spot for it. I'm glad I kept it all these years.
Kismet, Kevin. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Appreciate it. Let's go now to Amy, and Amy's with us from Cleveland.
Hi.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm curious to hear. I've heard several of your guests and mm-hmm. your callers say today that they were influenced by their parents to be collectors of art, but I'm wondering to what degree their early art educators, I'm an art teacher myself, I'm wondering how greatly they were influenced by their teachers to be appreciators of art.
Hmm. Judd Tully, is that something you can answer?
I could try. I mean, for me personally, I would say in terms of a teacher, I grew up in Chicago, and the Art Institute was my main teacher in terms of, you know, similar ways, dragged there as a kid, but then really grew to appreciate, you know, great-looking things. And so quite young, I was able to, you know, identify one artist versus another. And I think that museums form a tremendous educational component. And every museum has an educational department, and they have lectures, and they show films, and it's a tremendous resource. And virtually every community that's, you know, not a ghost town has one. So I would say in terms of the teaching part, that for me was the best.
Amy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. To prove that you don't have to be an heir to a fortune or a sports superstar to put together a great collection of art, here are Dorothy and Herbert Vogel. Herbert is a retired postal clerk, Dorothy a librarian. Budgeting their combined salaries, they began buying works by contemporary artists back in the early 1960s. Over the years, they accumulated over 2,000 works of art. Their passion has produced one of the best-known private collections of minimalist and conceptual art called the Dorothy and Herbert Vogel Collection. A large portion of it now belongs to the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. Dorothy and Herbert Vogel are with us from their home in Manhattan, and good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you very much.
Dorothy, you're a librarian. Herbert was a postal clerk. Most people are going to say, how in the world did you become prominent art collectors?
Well, because we used my salary to pay for the bills and for living expenses, and we used my husband's salary for buying the art. So I had complete control of all the finances, and so everything was paid. And then what was left over, we used it for the art collection.
And Herbert, why were you so passionate about this?
Because I just like art.
You just like it?
Yes.
Was there some art in particular that inspired you?
No.
Just art in general?
Right.
So how many artists do you have in your collection?
We have around over 250.
Any names that we would any names we would recognize?
We should know Christophe and Jean-Claude because we had a show at the National Gallery from our collection. And you should know Sal Lewitt. I think you know Will Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
We have mainly minimal conceptual artists, so I don't know how many are known to your listeners. We don't have too much of the pop artists who are more familiar, like Andy Warhol. We do have a few in the collection, but not many.
Do you still collect?
Yes, but not as much as we used to. My husband is in his 80s, and it's hard to get around, so we don't get to galleries like we used to. And as Judd Tully just said, getting around to the galleries is very important, and we did it in our when we were much younger and we had the energy, and that's how we were able to get to so much, to know so much.
Herbert, when you were collecting, I mean, how often would you go out looking for art?
As often as I could.
Usually every Saturday afternoon.
Definitely.
Definitely every Saturday afternoon.
At least that, if not a lot more.
Have you ever figured out how much over the years you've spent on all of these pieces of art?
No. Whatever the salary is of a postal clerk.
I assume the postal clerk's salary is not the same as that of an NBA starting guard.
You're right. And just now that we are both have pensions, his pension still goes for art and my pension still goes for living expenses.
We asked Grant Hill earlier about whether he had a favorite in his collection. He said, you know, I can't choose amongst my children. Do you guys feel the same way?
I feel the same way, but there are a few outstanding samples. We have a drawing of Herbie and me that was done by Will Barnett called The Collectors, and it's a drawing that is quite well known because the artist has used it himself in different catalogs and different exhibitions, and it's now owned by the National Gallery. And then we have a work by Richard Tuttle that we call Bluebird, but it's really has a more fancy title. And he has, again, used that for many purposes in giving talks about his work and using a sample of that in his lectures. So I guess those two stand out most.
Now, on your salary, the living salary, Dorothy,
yeah.
You also had to support the rent on your apartment there in New York City, and everybody knows apartments in New York City come at a very high price. One-bedroom apartment, where did you put all of this art?
Well, with great difficulty. We used all the closets, all the walls. We have a little terrace. We used that to put my clothes on. it was very difficult.
I've read you had some under the bed.
Yes, we did. You know, a lot of it was unframed drawings and Salinger boxes. And we used as much space as we could. And then we started having exhibitions, and the works would come back framed, and we didn't want to take them out of frame. So we just kept piling one work on top of the other and boxes on top of the boxes, and finally it was a warehouse.
Herb, just before we let you go, do you have any advice for somebody who's been inspired by this conversation and your example, just starting out?
I would say what interests them and what they think they would continue to like, I think they should take a chance if they want to.
Herbert Vogel and Dorothy Vogel, thank you both very much. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
This couple are contemporary art collectors. A large part of their well-known collection of minimal and conceptualist art called the Dorothy and Herbert Vogel Collection is now at the National Gallery of Art here in Washington. They joined us from their home in Manhattan in New York. If you want to learn more about their collection, you can go to our website at www.npr.org and click on the Talk of the Nation page. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And still with us is Judd Tully. He's at our bureau in New York. And let's get another caller on the air, and we'll go with Jason. And Jason is with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm a new gallery owner myself. Me and my partner, Stephanie, just opened our space called The Trunk Space last month, and we're mounting our second show in a couple weeks.
Who are your customers?
Our customers are people living in Arizona. They're usually young urban professionals. And they're buying usually their first couple pieces of art.
And just out of curiosity, how much does this stuff go for?
We have pieces right now that'll range anywhere from around $100 up to $900 to $1,000.
And do you and your wife or your partner collect art as well?
That's kind of how we got started. We're both artists ourselves, and over the years we started trading with our friends, and then we decided that there was enough talent in our own backyard that we could pull those people together and start showing their work and get them more exposure.
Judd Tully, is it some people have said that artists are the best customers for fine art. I guess they're also turned into retailers as well.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting, too, that communities, it doesn't have to be in New York. I mean, because there's interest in art everywhere, internationally. It's really quite amazing in that way.
Mm-hmm. Downtown Phoenix actually has a very thriving art scene thanks to an organization called ArtLink, which sponsors a monthly art walk on the first Friday of every month.
Well,
we couldn't be open without their support.
Good luck with the gallery.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Let's go with Donna, and Donna joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an artist, and my husband and I collect when we can. And I just want to say that, especially to a viewer, to a listener who might be thinking about getting into collecting, is that when you collect, you really get to participate in culture in a way that buying a poster doesn't sort of give you. You know, you really get to engage with what's going on when you collect contemporary art or art that you love and have a passion for.
It opens yourself to a new world.
Yes, it really does. Hmm. It really does, and you sort of have to go, do it once, and I think you get that charge, and I can see why for some it's quite addicting.
Donna, thanks. Judd, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the Vogels are, a tremendous example of that in terms of, what happened to their lives as a result of their passion for collecting and their collective eye. And they were, literally, romanced by numerous museums to get a hold of their collection. And they were, they've been featured on the, the front page of the Wall Street Journal, which is, which usually doesn't, it's great. And I agree with that viewpoint about it, how enriching it can be in terms of just even socially.
Yeah. Before we let you go, and Donna, thanks very much for the call. But before we let you go, Judd, and we just have about a minute or so left, a lot of people would view this as an investment. Is that the right way to go about it?
No, that is the wrong way to go about it. That is, it would be like saying, well, I'm going to make $1 million on the stock market. You really have to go with your eye and what you like and what you know and to see as much as you can. And every collector I've ever talked to has affirmed basically that it was about, really something that got them in the gut or whatever part really made them know they wanted it. And in terms of investment, it's, people might say, yes, get an art advisor and, we can, make this appreciate in X number of months like a stock. But art is not a commodity, and you'd be foolhardy to try to be an investor in it.
So spare a couple of extra bucks after you buy that piece of art and maybe buy a lottery ticket. Judd Tully, thanks very much for being with
us. Thank you.
Judd Tully, editor-at-large at Art and Auction magazine. He joined us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from the break, we'll talk with Jackie Robinson's daughter about a new book she has written about her father. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.